Jonathan Swift's hero encounters towards the end of his voyages in Gulliver's Travels provide the inspiration for a story written and read by Finlay Welsh, The Perfection of Nature.
I flung myself into the surf, and the spray flew up and blinded me. I tried desperately to shake the beasts off, but I couldn't escape them. They swarmed over me, clutched and clawed at me, and tried to pull me down. My nostrils filled with the stench of them. I kicked out and lunged and twisted, but there were too many. In the end, I gave up trying to fight them. I staggered to a stop and stood trembling and exhausted in the shallow water, and they laid hold of me, and I knew I would never be free again. The place they put me in. Walls. Walls on every side. Thick, unyielding walls made out of the smoke-blackened corpses of trees. A wall at each flank, a wall at my back, and a wall to my face. The floor I stood on, a wall as hard as beaten clay. A wall over me like a slab of rock. And beyond those walls, there were more walls, and I sensed more beyond those. Facing me, there was a space which let in light and air. What I saw through there was against all reason. No land, no beach, nor hills, nor meadow, nor forest. Beyond the walls there was nothing but endless ocean. I had never conceived of such a thing. And my prison moved with the swell of the ocean. It reared and bucked, at times so violently that the sea rushed in and my hooves slithered on the soaking, tilting floor, and I was thrown hard against the walls. Somehow I was being carried on the ocean, unimaginably, inconceivably upon the surface of the ocean, to somewhere that should not be, far away from my homeland, far from Houyhnhnm land. My captors scuttled and swarmed above me. Their howls and shrieks and gibbering terrified me. Of course, they were beasts, irrational and unpredictable. They were yahoos. But the yahoos I kept at home had hair on their backs and bellies and walked on all four legs. The creature who came in every day to leave me fresh oats and hay walked only on his hind legs, and his skin hung in him loosely, flapping obscenely as he moved. His limbs were naked, and his claws stunted and useless. I shrank from him, and shouted at him to keep back, and reared if he came too close. The days and nights passed. The heaving ocean rolled endlessly under me. I remembered my grandsire, sitting at the manger in our family house, surrounded by relatives and neighbors. He finishes his warm mash, and settles back on his mat, and tells us about a strange hairless yahoo he owned, who learned to speak the language of the Houyhnhnms, who walked on his hind legs because his forelegs were too soft to bear him, who covered his hairless body with the skins and hairs of other animals. He says, he intrigued me. He was nothing but a yahoo, a beast, but by some strange quirk of nature he seemed to have acquired a small measure of intelligence. He could talk. He seemed capable of rational thought. He told me about the country he came from, a place so alien that there are no words in our language to describe it. He struggled to explain ideas he only had words for in his own tongue. All I could understand of them was that they were based on corruption and greed. The more he told me, the more it was obvious that his kind abused reason. Their rationality was irrationality. Their intelligence was stupidity. Our yahoos are cruel and immoral, but they're more to be pitied than scorned. It's the nature of the beast. These creatures use what little pittance of reason they have, only to aggravate their natural brutishness and invent worse depravities. My grandsire told us that these yahoos used Houyhnhnms as beasts of burden, to draw loads and carry their yahoo masters on their backs. I could not accept that. I was a creature of reason. I was Houyhnhnm, which means the perfection of nature. Months passed. Then I heard the cries of birds and caught the smell of grass in the wind. As we approached the shore, we moved through a forest of lifeless trees that rose out of the sea. Hundreds of dead trunks, closely packed, creaking and swaying, towered out of sight above me. Naked branches stuck out, jagged and stark from the trunks. Trailers hung from them like weeds. Yahoos swarmed over them and their howls mixed with the screams of gulls. I realized that it was no forest, but hundreds of vessels like the one that had carried me here. Then they dragged me from my prison, and I stood on dry land. Hard stone under my hooves, strange structures, houses made of stones, piled high and higgledy-piggledy up the slope from the waterfront like scree on a mountainside. The rumble and clatter and squeal of unnameable engines and artifacts, the smells of the sea and fish, and the stink of burning, and the rendered fat of animals. Yahoos everywhere. And Hunims. They labored like cattle, harnessed and trussed, dragging carts and carriages laden with yahoos and dead trees and butchered carcasses. Some carried yahoos on their backs. I called out to them, and they pricked up their ears and rolled their eyes towards me, but they didn't answer me. A bay with a tall yahoo on his back came and stopped beside me, and the yahoo climbed down and ran his forelimbs over my withers and shoulders and flanks and felt my legs. I pushed him away, but the creatures that held me gripped me more tightly, and he persisted. I said to the bay, "You are Hunim. Why do you let them do this?" He started and tossed his head, showed the whites of his eyes, but didn't speak. They bound me with a halter and a leading rope, and nailed iron shoes to my hooves, and the tall yahoo mounted the bay and led me away from the shore and the forest of floating prisons and up between the piled-up, jumbled stacks of houses. We travelled across rolling hills between fields of oats and barley, past woods and meadows and pastures where cattle or sheep grazed, and sometimes Hunims, who raised their heads to watch us pass, but never spoke. So we came here. The house stands in the shelter of a spinney of elms and chestnut trees, as high as three of our Hunim houses, one on top of the other, built of many red and yellow stones which seem to hold in them the warmth of the sun. Not thatched like ours, but roofed with slate against the rain. A courtyard, a well, ducks and chickens. And beside the house, a smaller house, much like one of ours, with a little iron Hunim on the roof, which swings to meet the wind. Clean straw on the earthen floor, and a rack and a manger. I have neighbours. The bay, two chestnuts, and a sorrel nag. A young yahoo brings us fresh hay and water, and changes our straw. He smells more of Hunim than yahoo. The place bustles. There is the tall one who is the master here, his mate and their young ones, their servants and workers. And there are visitors. They come to gaze at me, amazed or amused at the way I sit on my haunches at my manger instead of standing like the others, at the way I raise my hoof to them when they enter, at my attempts to talk to them. They seem unable to catch the patterns in the sounds I make, to hear it as speech. So I try to learn their language. The word they use for themselves, not yahoo, but human or man, and they call us horse. But I can't frame the sounds. Gullet and tongue and jaw twist and mangle the words into meaningless noise. And not expecting me to understand, they don't speak to me. So we look at one another across a wordless gulf. Human and Hunim, Hunim and human, like dumb animals. There's one who looks at me quizzically, at length, leaning his head to one side, the sparkle in his eye in contrast to his somber dress. And sometimes their language is like the howling of beasts, yells and exclamations, hubbub and chaos. They speak over one another, interrupt each other, they talk without sense, say things which are not so, as if they were so, talk of things that never were and never could be. its language inverted, irrational, without purpose. Except that it seems to give them pleasure. There's a sound they make. It doesn't sound like speech, but it isn't like the howling of beasts. They call it laughter. The master's children laugh all the time. They run through the buildings, in and out of our stalls and the byre and the house, swooping like the martins which nest under the eaves. Their laughter rings in the walls. One night, I watched the young groom and the dairymaid mate in the straw of the empty stall next to mine. Afterwards, they lay beside one another. They touched each other's faces with their lips and hands, and murmured too quietly to hear, and laughed a little, and lay a long time, and said nothing. Just before dawn, the maid rose and slipped back to the house. I remembered my own mating. There had been kindness, but there had been no reason to linger afterwards. I let the groom tend to me. He brushes my coat and hums to himself and says simple words to me. Childish talk. Somehow I don't mind. He combs my mane. Often they take us to a pasture where there is sweet grass and clover and cowslip. In the distance, I often see a string of horses, long-legged and muscular and beautiful, galloping with men on their backs. A fence surrounds the pasture, but I have fresh air there and room to run. Sometimes, especially when the wind gusts and shakes the trees and sends the clouds scudding across the sky, it feels like freedom. I try to speak to the horses, but they are dumb. One night, wrapped in the warm golden musk of straw and horses, I had a dream. We leaped the fence, gathered together into a great herd, and then, even in the dream, I was astonished at the thought. We rose like birds and flew across the fields and over the cascading harbour with its forest of ships and across the ocean, back to Hunem land. In the morning sunshine, when we lay in the meadow with our forelegs tucked beneath us, I told the horses about the dream. But they are dumb. They understand only the simplest things. They are not Hunims. Though even Hunims would never understand how we could have risen like birds and flown. And perhaps the horses understood a little. It was only a dream. Perhaps they thought that I was fanciful. Perhaps I am. Perhaps Hunemland is the dream. Every day it seems more and more so. The man's breath is in my nostrils, his hand on my muzzle. The leather slips gently over my ears. I take the bit in my mouth and settle it comfortably into the space that seems made for it between my teeth, under my silent tongue. The man turns to his companion. It is the somber man with the laughing eyes who always looks at me so quizzically. The man says to him, "A fine mare is she not, Dean Swift? Shall we see how well she flies?" We walk out of the stall and into the sunlit yard.
Finlay Welsh was reading his own short story, The Perfection of Nature. The producer in Glasgow was David Jackson Young.